a fortune teller. His biggest U.S. hit, and Bobby, this is the one that most Americans remember you for.
Yes, that's the song that changed my life, you know. A guy named Red Robinson sent it to a friend in Seattle.
The DJ, Red Robinson?
Red Robinson, the DJ, sent it to a DJ friend in Seattle, who then sent it to Kapoi, Hawaii. All of a sudden, it's going up the charts without any records. And we get a call from Delphi Records said, we got to put this record out. So that's how I actually got a label deal with Delphi in the 60s.
Oh, that's amazing.
Just by friends, helping friends and pushing the buttons, you know.
And who wrote the song?
Fortunately, it was a Herdin and Herdin song. Dyer Herdin and Basil Herdin, my late managers, actually wrote most of those hits that we had. And, you know, I got lucky along the way because when the record started to work and the cash flow started to work, they made me a partner in everything. I was a partner in a publishing company.
Oh, wow.
In a record company. And that's before the Beatles owned Apple Records. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe what was happening to me. And that's why I toured mostly in Canada.
It's true that publishing is where it's at, right?
Oh, boy. It's like an insurance policy that never goes away.
That's amazing.
It is.
And if your songs get used in advertisements and stuff, then you get paid for that as well, right?
Oh, yeah. And of late, they actually pay the recording artist that sings the song, even if he didn't write it. But in the early days, they never did. A little trivia for you. You know, we were running on 5 records, and we were wondering what would we do next, because, you know, the DJs now were our friends, and we were feeling a little guilty to come in with asking, you know, them to listen and play for another record. So we're trying to think of what could we do. What could we do that would be something for the station where they'd be happy to see us? So Curtola, Coca-Cola. We approached Coca-Cola to do a commercial.
No way, really?
About 4 months.
Yeah.
But we went in that, we by this time we were recording in Nashville, and we recorded a commercial called Things Go Better with Coca-Cola. It was the first time that a commercial had ever been made to sound like a top 40 record ever anywhere in the world. And I got the credit for that at the Coca-Cola Hall of Fame in Atlanta and Las Vegas, you'll see. So we started a trend, and when that song was released, nobody knows this, but I got paid a royalty every time it was played.
Every time the commercial got played?
Every time the commercial was paid, because no one thought that these things would stretch into anything of any consequence. And the kids went absolutely crazy.
Wow.
You know, they still have some of those Coke bottles, but you talk about another coincidence. Like, who would have ever thought that would happen?
You still driving that Cadillac?
Yeah, I got, you know me, I got my toys. Thank God I got to keep some of them, you know? You know, those old cars. It's sad to think the ones that we gave away, like we wore out driving and touring, you know?
Yeah.
What a life. Matt, what a life, I tell you. And yeah. I'm still having fun.
Now, you mentioned that you were recording in Nashville at that time. It was at RCA Studios in Nashville?
It was at RCA. And
wow. All the big guys recorded there.
Yeah, Chet Atkins was running it back then, and Bill Porter, who recorded all of Elvis's stuff, and he actually invented the reverberation chamber, the echo chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Up to that point, they used to put a mic behind a mic and tape it together, you know, to get the distance and the echo effect right. And he actually created a chamber to do that. So Bill, God love him. Those days, we always liked to record at night, and, you know, they're in the session. I got, like, Floyd Kramer, Boots Randolph, and the Anita Kerr Singers, even the Jordanaires. I actually recorded with the Jordanaires, too.
Wow.
When Elvis was in town, nobody could get a night session.
Right.
So it's tough to sing during the day, you know. But when he was in town, he'd record all night. It was just, you couldn't get close to the studio.
Roy Orbison used to talk about that, too. Like, he'd have to book around Elvis.
Exactly. We all did.
Yeah.
I was actually there when Roy recorded Pretty Woman.
Oh, you were in the studio.
I was. And actually, Bill Porter recorded it at Monument. And I'm trying to remember how many times he overlaid the guitar to get that dum 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 dum.
Oh, wow.
Boom, 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 boom. I think he overlaid it about, I'm not sure, but it was quite a few times. I don't know if it's 15 or 17 times in layers. But you couldn't tell the way he did it. But you notice how fat it got without getting loud?
Yeah, that's true.
Guy was brilliant how he did that song.
What did you think of that song when you first heard it?
Goosebumps.
Yeah.
But Roy Orbison, I mean, was a great friend of mine. I'll give you a quick Roy Orbison story. God bless him. Because he was singing just like just before he did the Traveling Wilburys and everything. He was back on tour, singing as good as he did in the 60s.
Sure.
And we played Expo in Vancouver together. And we were both on the same show. And Roy insisted that I have co-billing.
Oh.
He insisted. So
wow.
There we were, neck to neck. Pal to pal, you know, but how many years on the road were we crisscross? But what a wonderful, sincere, genuine human being.
Yeah, what a nice guy.
Oh, and what a voice.
That's a good story. That's a good story.
You know, I used to go to the show any time I could, and I'd sit in the audience and my mouth would be open because he never talked that much, but he sang song after song. It was hits. He blew you away because everyone was number one. Incredible guy.
Yeah, and the voice so... Oh. Unique and so strong and powerful
unique.
And musical.
So unique.
Very musical.
And of course, Elvis inspired all of us to just get in there and do it, you know?
Right.
He was something else.
Was Fortune Teller recorded in Nashville?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So
it was recorded in Nashville, and on our way back from Nashville to Thunder Bay, we actually stopped in Minneapolis because it took me from Nashville to Minneapolis to convince my managers to let me overlay the pickups of tell me, tell me, tell me. You know, the pickups mm-hmm. into the bridge?
Yeah.
Will we meet on a busy corner? But the pickups into the bridge. Tell me, tell me, tell me. We had to actually overdub them, and we did in Minneapolis.
Oh.
That's how that happened.
Wow, on the way back.
Yeah, and the best story is that they were afraid of that song.
Afraid of it?
They were afraid of it. So, you know, you plan your releases, and here, at the end of the story here, we only had one record left to release before we recorded again, and it was Fortune Teller, and they didn't want to put it out. They finally put it out. Just goes to show you, right?
Yeah.
You can't. You don't know. They put it out, and it sort of, a few stations played it, bup, 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 bounced around a little bit, and then all of a sudden, boom. Like, you don't know.
No, it's
that's why recording artists are so religious. We pray a lot.
Well, some people say, you know, they have an ear. They.
Some people might, but you know, just all the people around us. How many times we thought we knew?
Yeah.
And the left hook, you don't.
Well, look, how many flip sides became huge hits? I mean, you know, the labels and the artists themselves didn't know that the throwaway B song would be the number one hit, whereas the A side would go nowhere sometimes.
Exactly.
So you just never know. And it's
never know.
And sometimes it's just the right time of year. It coincides with something else. I mean, it's all a crapshoot anyway.
It's a crapshoot, but guys like yourself, Matt, you know, with their show, you know, like the Night Prowl here, you know, I mean, they were listening to the fans. They knew what was working and what wasn't. It was hard for us to pick it like 3 months earlier when we were recording. But you're right. That timing thing, if it could ever land right, oh.
I have a blast from your past right now, Bobby.
Hey, I'm having a ball. Thanks for letting me talk so much.
Thanks for coming on the show.
The cat. Here we go.
I got an email from a guy named Gary. And Gary says, ask Bobby Curtola if he remembers playing a teen conference dance in Marathon, Ontario, back somewhere in 1958 or so. I was the one who taped the show, and Bobby copied the tape. Gary T.
My God, you know, that youth conference was just when the song, it was 1960, 59 or 60. I think it was 60. That's just when I had recorded the song, and it was just coming out. And Marathon was a teen conference. We all went off in a bus, all of the kids from Thunder Bay to the conference. From the different high school representatives. And I remember that. Yeah, I do. And I remembered because I got to stay at the sheriff's house.
The sheriff's house?
The sheriff's house in Marathon. And
he'll
tell you that. You write to Gary and he'll know. And I can't remember the gentleman's name. And it's true. He had a beautiful daughter and he had a rifle on the wall.
So
what do you want to know? Now I know why the rifle was on the wall.
Shotgun across his lap, right? Oh.
But he was a great guy. He was very, very nice to all of us. I remember that. That was, you can imagine, that was my, like, one of my first shows out of Thunder Bay. And I had just started singing at the school assemblies in the fall, the beginning of the year of 59. So, wow, the band was together. Yeah, gee, unbelievable. He remembers that.
How time flies, right?
God, that's 50 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm getting old.
Let's tell me about Three Rows Over.
Three Rows Over was brought to me by Anita Kerr. You know the Anita Kerr singers?
Sure, yeah.
And she said, Bobby, you have to record this song. And without a doubt, she picked it as a hit. She was the one that said, "This is a hit record."
Do they
so
sing
we
on it?
Recorded it, and my God, it was a monster. So it never got released in the United States, which I don't understand.
Oh, so it probably has never been played on American radio before.
No, actually, the Delphi, there's another story there with the U.S. releases, but that's for another time. Well,
don't rain on my parade, Bobby.
I want to believe
I'm the first one to play this in America.
You might be.
All right,
let's do the dum da dum dums together.
All right, now is this done in Nashville?
Nashville, Tennessee. Nita Kersinger's just rocking.
There's a girl in school that I adore. She's a cute little girl, 5'4". She's got a personality, the talk of the town. She sits 3 rows over and 2 seats down. I've got competition, it seems galore, but I'm the guy she's waiting for.